What would you do if everything you knew, your home, your safety, your very identity, vanished overnight? Sarah Crewe discovers the answer on her 11th birthday when a messenger arrives with news that shatters her world. Her beloved father is dead, his fortune lost in failed diamond mines. In one devastating moment, this privileged child becomes an orphan with nothing. Yet, what unfolds isn't a story of defeat, but of transformation, a profound exploration of what happens when we're stripped of everything except who we truly are. Frances Hodgson Burnett's timeless tale asks a question that haunts us all. Does our character depend on our circumstances, or can something essential survive even the cruelest reversals of fortune? Sarah arrives at Miss Minchin's boarding school wrapped in luxury, expensive clothes, a French doll named Emily, and her father's adoring attention. Miss Minchin sees her as a living advertisement, calling her a little princess in terms of privilege alone. But something deeper sets Sarah apart. When her French teacher assumes she needs basic lessons, Sarah studies the primer without complaint, despite being perfectly fluent. Only when pressed does she reveal her late mother was French. Her intelligence manifests through quiet competence, not boasting. More revealing is how Sarah treats those society deems unimportant. When she discovers Becky, the scullery maid, asleep in her chair, Sarah's response defies Victorian class boundaries. "You were tired. You could not help it." She shares food and offers friendship that transcends their stations. "We are just the same," Sarah insists. "It's just an accident that I am not you and you are not me." This radical empathy, seeing herself in a servant girl, reveals qualities that wealth didn't create and, as we'll discover, poverty cannot destroy. Captain Crewe dies delirious with jungle fever, raving about his little girl, having lost everything to diamond mines that brought ruin instead of wealth. His trusted friend vanished with the investments, leaving Sarah penniless. Miss Minchin's reaction strips away any pretense of kindness. She feels personally robbed that her profitable pupil has become a little pauper. When threatened with turning Sarah out, a lawyer cynically suggests keeping her to get a good deal out of her as unpaid labor. Sarah's transformation is deliberately cruel. She's moved to a bare attic, stripped of fine clothes, and assigned grueling work, teaching, running errands, scrubbing floors. Miss Minchin designs this not for practicality, but to break Sarah's spirit. When Miss Minchin demands gratitude for my kindness in giving you a home, something snaps. "You are not kind," Sarah says fiercely, "and it is not a home." That first night brings wild grief as Sarah whispers repeatedly, "My papa is dead." The hard bed, darkness, and scurrying rats intensify her suffering. This crucible will test whether Sarah's princess-like qualities were merely privilege or something that can survive brutal reality. Rather than surrendering to despair, Sarah transforms her prison through imagination. She pretends she's a prisoner in the Bastille, with Miss Minchin as jailer and Becky as the fellow prisoner in the next cell. This isn't denial. She acknowledges her suffering, but gives it narrative meaning. When Lottie discovers the ugly attic, Sarah reimagines it, pointing out chimneys with curling smoke, hopping sparrows, mysterious neighboring windows. Most remarkably, Sarah befriends Melchizedek, a large rat who visits her room. Rather than fear, she feels philosophical kinship. "I dare say it is rather hard to be a rat. Nobody likes you." She tames him so thoroughly that he takes food from her hand. When Ermengarde remarks that Sarah talks about the rat as if he were a person, Sarah insists, "He is a person. He gets hungry and frightened just as we do." Sarah's discovered what modern psychology confirms. We can't always control our circumstances, but we can control how we interpret them. Her imagination doesn't deny suffering. It transforms suffering into something bearable, even meaningful. She and Becky develop a secret code, knocking on the wall with messages like, "Prisoner, are you there?" "Yes, I am here, and all is well." Sarah's response to cruelty reveals her true character. She maintains her friendship with Becky as genuine equals, transcending any servant-mistress dynamic. The defining moment comes when she finds a four-penny piece while starving. After buying hot buns, she encounters a beggar child even more destitute and gives away five of her six buns, keeping just one. The baker woman who witnesses this is so moved she invites the beggar child in, promising future bread for that young one's sake. Throughout her ordeal, Sarah clings to her princess philosophy, behaving with grace, courage, and generosity regardless of circumstances. When Miss Minchin boxes her ears, Sarah boldly imagines how she'd react if Sarah were truly a princess. "Whatever comes cannot alter one thing," Sarah tells Becky. "If I am a princess in rags and tatters, I can be a princess inside." This conviction, that dignity comes from within rather than external circumstances, sustains her through years of degradation. Sarah awakens to her attic transformed, blazing fire, warm bedding, hot food, comfortable furniture. A book inscription reads, "To the little girl in the attic," from a friend. These mysterious gifts restore her health and faith in goodness. She responds with a grateful note signed, "The Little Girl in the Attic." The benefactor is Mr. Carisford, her father's friend, working through Ram Dass. The diamond mines succeeded. Sarah inherits millions. Her response reveals unchanged character. No vengeance toward Miss Minchin, no pride toward former friends. She appoints Becky as her attendant and focuses on healing Mr. Carisford's guilt-racked spirit. Through caring for Sarah, he finds redemption. Sarah's kindness creates lasting change, and the beggar child she once fed now works at the bakery, clean, well-fed, purposeful. Sarah proposes using her wealth to feed hungry children through the shop, with Anne as administrator. The baker woman reveals that witnessing Sarah's generosity inspired her own ongoing charity. With restored fortune, Sarah formalizes this practice, her princess-like qualities finding fullest expression through ripples of kindness extending far beyond herself. We build fortresses of wealth, status, and security, believing these structures define us. Then life takes things away. Jobs vanish, relationships end, health fails. What remains when everything else is gone? Sarah's answer, what remains is who you choose to be, not what circumstances make you, but what you make of circumstances. Her story isn't about magical rescue, though rescue comes, but about transforming suffering through imagination, maintaining dignity through degradation, and choosing kindness when kindness seems foolish. She discovered that true wealth isn't measured in diamonds, but in one's capacity to find meaning in rats and sparrows, to share the last bun with someone hungrier, to be a princess not because of circumstances, but in spite of them. This is Burnett's real magic, recognizing that our deepest self, the part that imagines, connects, and cares, survives everything. That attic wasn't just a room, but a metaphor for the human condition. We all face our own attics, those cold spaces where comfort vanishes and we're stripped to essentials. The question isn't whether we'll face such moments, but what we'll discover when we do. Will we find only bitterness, or will we find, like Sarah, that something essential survives, something no circumstance can touch, no cruelty can destroy?